You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Welcome to Teachings in the Air. Podcast with Jerry Oldman, coming to you from Hunkaminam territory with a podcast series about Indigenous men's health and wellness. We aim to inspire, motivate, and empower Indigenous men to be sound in mind, body, and spirit, because that's what health means. Hello, this is Teachings in the Air with Jerry Oldman. Today's podcast is called Let the Ceremony Begin. This is basically about my journey, and you could say spiritual journey. You know, and it took me many, a quarter of my life longer. In fact, I'm still learning, I'm still thinking about spirit and creation and the powerful mystery. But my introduction to this world was through Christianity and my reserve in my Indian day school and residential school is where I started to receive instruction on Christianity, on Christians. It wasn't until recently that I found out that the word Christian, if you're a Christian, that means you want to be like Christ. And from the stories and the Bible, it's a wonderful man. But anyway, as a child, I was been taught first off to say prayers, Our Father, the Hail Mary, the act of contrition. You know, I was going through the system and being taught, you know, about communion, where I go to a confession to cleanse myself of sins and have penance, then have the body of Christ through the host, communion, holy communion. So I learned about that and went through that, but I also was learning about heaven, purgatory, and hell. You know, when I think about it, it was a fear-based system for me, personally for me. You know, and I learned about hell. It's down, you know, like in the center of the earth or somewhere down there was the impression I had, and heaven is above. And that hell, if you went to hell, it's an eternal damnation, eternal suffering with the devil. And if you go to heaven, you make it to heaven, it's happiness and, you know, a good life with God. Then, of course, there was purgatory, which is between heaven and hell, that you could be stuck in there. Unless they do holy masses for you and do rituals for you or ceremonies so you can continue on. Anyway, that's what I was learning, right or wrong. That's what my mind was sorting out. You know, and I was afraid of, you know, when they're teaching about mortal sin, that a mortal sin is it leaves a black mark on your soul. And you have enough of those and you're going to go to hell unless you go to confession and Holy Communion and ask for forgiveness from God. So my experience was fear-based, and as a result, I had anxiety about going to hell. Worried, disturbed, you know, and feeling somehow guilty. And I heard that if you aren't baptized, there's no way you're going to get to heaven. When I heard that, I thought about all my ancestors that did not know Christ. And in my mind, I was saying, do you mean you're going to tell me all my ancestors went to hell because they didn't know Christ? They didn't get baptized? So it was in high school, at the residential school. I started to question when we were taking lessons. I started to ask questions about, I guess you can say, the miracles, rising from the dead, going to heaven alive, you know, those teachings. And I asked how this could be, like Immaculate Conception. And the brother told me, Jerry, you have to have faith. You have to believe. That answer did not sit well with me. So I started to oppose the church's authority. You know, I didn't, by not going to church, not going to a confession, not taking Holy Communion. I would go to church, you know, one of my relatives had a funeral, Christian-style funeral, or my friends, or a wedding. I would go. So I started to question this, and I guess you could say rebel, turned against it. You know, and I became, I guess you could say, godless in that way at that time. Then it was then I started to hear about our ways of nourishing our spirit, you know, even what a spirit is. You know, so it was, you know, I remember what I had done was I built a sweat lodge and I wanted to, you know, start to train. But that was after getting ahead of myself here. My first actual ritual was running. One of my uncles said the best way to train, and it seemed for everything, was to run. Early in the morning, you know, just at the break of dawn, at the crack of dawn, be out there running. Then after that, added the ritual of bathing in the cold water. You know, so I started doing that consistently, running and bathing. You know, and it was something that, you know, of course, like being human, I'd be lazy in the morning and say, oh, I don't want to go running today. So I started to do little rituals along with that by putting my running shoes right beside my bed, my shorts, my running gear. So as soon as I get up, I'd be dressing up to hit the road. So that was my life as a runner. Then they added bathing. Then they said, when you go down to the water, you take fir boughs on your run or cedar boughs and you go stand in the water before you do your four submersions and brush yourself off, scrub yourself off with those boughs. And I was told that that'll make you stronger and it'll cleanse you. So I started to do that, you know, and the cold water, I didn't like it at first, you know, my fingers would be cold, my toes would be cold. It just wasn't a good, it wasn't, didn't feel good. Until one day, you know, and I was going down and there was snow and ice and I had my boughs and as I was walking to the water, I started to talk to the water. It became a ritual to me to talk to the medicines. I said, I'm here because I need help and I'm going to turn myself over to you, water. I'm going to give myself to you. And it changed my whole experience and I got into the water and I'm scrubbing myself, you know, and I could smell the boughs and I could You hear the sound of them going by my ears. I'm scrubbing my back. And I all of a sudden, I can see clear. I can see around me. I became aware. And when I went into the water, it was like, oh, this is so good. This is so beautiful. And I'd submerge myself four times. And as time went on, I would do it longer and longer. So my uncle, not knowing that he's watching or aware that I'm doing this, then he says, and if you want to get stronger, when you go down to the water after you scrub yourself, you dive under and you look for a round rock. It'll fit into the palm of your hand. Once you find that, then you scrub all your muscles with that rock. And of course, that meant being in the water longer. So I started to do that, and I started to, what they say, Kwazanchu, to train myself. So that was my introduction. They did not say this is sacred or this is a ceremony. They just said, do this and you'll be stronger. So it wasn't like, I guess you could say in the Christianity, there's that supreme being, that Lord, that controlling power. In this one, it was all about myself going out and doing the things, doing this stuff. So I started to do that, and so then I started to hear the teachings from uncles, relatives, other elders from different nations. I heard the stories about the healers and how they worked and the medicines they used. So I started to hear that, and I became hungry for it. And then, I went to my first ceremony where it's like, with rituals, with music, with medicine, with the language as a group. And I remember I wanted to go to this, but I was afraid. I had some anxiety about making mistakes. I had never been in this, but it's such a wonderful man doing the ceremony. He thanked us for coming and asked who had all been to a lodge before. And there's quite a few of us that never had been. He says, don't worry, I'm glad you're here. He said, and he calls this young fella over and said, this is my helper. He's going to be a translator too, because I'll be speaking in my language when we get into the sweat lodge. And he'll translate so you'll have some understanding. So we went in, and closed the door, and it's black and dark, and there you can see the rocks glowing in the pit. And he starts talking to us, and he's welcoming us to the ceremony. And he says, we're going to start the ceremony. So he said, and I want you all to relax. I want you to enjoy this. He says, some of you are worried, making mistakes. I want you to let you know you cannot make mistake with me here. And then he says, I can feel some of you smiling. Good, you're relaxing now. I want you to enjoy this and you're going to learn. So it's such a wonderful ceremony. And the translator was talking about what he was saying, and he's talking to the Creator. And at one point, there was four rounds, of course, in ritual and ceremony. You got the beginning and you got the end. The beginning, the middle, and the end. So in there, during the ceremony, in one of the rounds, he was talking in these languages. It sounded like it's very rhythmic and not monotone. It's filled with feeling, and could hear him weeping. And the translator said, he's praying for his grandchildren, that they have teachers and healers in their life when he's gone. Oh, I got touched. This man was so compassionate, so caring. And I said, I want that. So authentic, so sincere, so real. So that is my first group ceremony. Indigenous, totally indigenous. So I went home and I built a squid lodge. You know, basically, I call it my treatment center. I'd have the urge to drink or do drugs, and I'd be walking up to my lodge with my blankets and axe and pitchfork, and you know, and I'd be spend over half a day there, cutting wood, getting ready, and by the time I'm all done, I don't want to drink or do drugs. You know, my uncle told me my great-grandfather's sweat lodge rode, always carried his covers with him on horseback when he went hunting or whatever he was doing, he'd always have a lodge. So I started doing that too. You know, before I do haying, you know, I cut hay and bale it. I'd have a sweat for safety and I get it done before the rain, you know, before I go harvesting fish and I camp 2 weeks down the river, I'd have a sweat lodge. You know, so I started to use ceremony and ritual by myself first, and then I had a chance to be with large groups. Oh, that was special. So as I was growing up in this, there was a conundrum for me, which means a difficult problem. There was no one participating in my community that I know of, that I knew of at that time, in our ceremonies and rituals. You know, and I wanted to return to our ways, and I didn't have a teacher. And that's where the Teachings of the Air podcast name comes from. I went to live with an elder, and I told this story, you know, and I would cook, do dishes, sweep the floor, live with these two elders and some of their grandchildren. The evening I would, after we finished eating, I'd put on the water to boil for tea, and I'd wash the dishes. And I finish the dishes and I'm sweeping the floor, and the old man comes in, sits at the table. I finish the dishes and sweeping the floor, and I pour him a cup of tea. And he sits there and he starts telling me stories. He starts laying teachings at my feet. This man did not follow Christ, you know, so I was really glad to be with him, to hear Stetliam way, or his way. You know, and he's the one that he said to me, "You look down sometimes, Jerry. What is it? What's bothering you?" And I told him, "Oh, you know, we're losing our music, our ceremonies and rituals." And he sort of snorts and he looks at me and he says, "If you want the music, you just go sit up in the by the trees or the water or up on the mountain and listen. There's songs all over," he says, "it's in the air. How do you think those songs, where do you think they come from? Other human beings caught the music. You can do it too. You might have to work hard at it, but you can do it." Same with ceremony. They would go sit in the mountain sometimes for days and months to get a ceremony to help the people. He says, it's in the air. Everything you know comes through the air, Jerry. Everything. So there was a teacher in my own land. And my granny was a teacher too. I didn't know that because they weren't talking about religion or about God. They're talking about life, about plants, about animals, about the earth, about each other, about themselves. You know, so it was an eye-opener for me. Like the ceremony for after birth, to take part of it after birth and put it in a special bundle and put it in the earth or in the water or hang it in the tree. I asked my late grandmother, "Why, Mom, why do we do that? Why did our people used to do that?" And she says, oh, son, you're going to connect a baby to the earth. Because now the baby is going to be fed from food from the earth. And oxygen is going to come from the earth. When we're inside your mom, everything comes from your mother. Everything. Now that you're out in the world, the earth is going to feed you, going to gift you with everything you need to live. I said, what happens if they don't do that, Mom? And she says, oh, they have a chance of going crazy, son. I laugh today because I think that's what's happening with us, partially. You know, and then there was a naming ceremony. My grandauntie, you know, said, going to give me her dad's name. Oh, we're going to have a feast. We're going to have a little giveaway, you know, and I covered the witnesses with blankets and got this name. Hand drumming after, oh, it was beautiful. Brought the people together. Then, of course, there's a, you know, I think this is a one that's critical for our development. It was a vision quest, what they call the vision quest, and what my elder calls Kwasanchut. So you'd go and sit there for, build you a little lodge, or I was a small lodge, and the elder had me pick fir boughs, and in the springtime, the tips were nice and light green, but it was very soft. He lined the floor with those boughs, like making a mattress. He says, okay, that's where you're going to be for 4 days and nights. He says, after a while, your breath is going to get strong, so you chew on some of these tips of these fir boughs, and it'll freshen your mouth, but don't swallow it. I said, okay. So I'm up there, you know, and because I asked him, I didn't ask for this ceremony. I just went to him and said, do you remember when you said you would teach me? Because he told me he would teach me when I was 13 or 14 years old. He says, I see something in you. And there, you know, I was thinking I didn't have elders that know the way, but he knew the way. And I was there, and I, of course, I talked to myself after I'm there for, you know, just for 12 hours. I'm there, you know, and I'm starting to feel the effects of fasting, and I started talking to myself, what are you doing here? What are you doing? And of course, my answer is, you are fasting. And, you know, I wasn't really settled. I was questioning and parts of me saying, I wish I didn't do this. You know, so I'm there 2 days. I'm like that. Suffering. And as a third day, it's the first time I started using I statements in my life since probably since before grade one. I asked again in my mind, what are you doing? And my answer was, I am fasting. I'm looking for my purpose, because they said, ask for something when you go there. I was looking, what am I supposed to do in life? So that's what, as soon as that happened, it's almost like, it's dark in the lodge, but almost like the lights went on. It's daytime and I could hear a bumblebee. And I'm sitting there waving my hands around my head because I thought it was inside the lodge. But it's circling the lodge outside of my head. You're bzzz, bzzz, bzzz. I say, oh, I could hear the wind in the trees, the insects. All of a sudden I hear this little shuffling sound, and the black bear came and walked around my lodge. And I went out, And it's like magical. I can see the green on the trees or pine trees and fir trees where I'm from. I can see the clouds in the sky and the mountains and the glaciers. It was just beautiful. Beautiful. And that's when I sat down again. I started to feel music, our music. And I started to formulate. I could see what I was to do. And it was to do music when I work, and also to be with people. Oh, and I finished that, and the elder come for me. Oh, I was walking down the mountain, I was weeping. I had my purpose now. I had my vision. So that's that ceremony for me. It's individual. Looking for help. Then, of course, we have weddings and memorials. You know, I've done weddings. I've been to memorials when we're honoring our ancestors. And our recent ones, I went into the spirit world, usually a year or 4 years after, depending on the individual and the family. And the weddings, you know, like where people are tied together and talked to and encouraged how to be. Then, of course, there's the funeral, you know, and we help people let go to do their grieving, you know, to not to get stuck in pain and suffering. Don't suffer. Don't reject that pain. It's better to let it out, to free yourself. It's natural to have pain when someone leaves. When you feel, you heal. I remember when my dad passed, my granny done that ceremony for me. Cut my hair, cut my toenails and fingernails, tied the buckskin laces around my ankles and wrists and neck, told me to let go of my dad. Don't take those off, let them fall off by themselves. She said, we're still here, son. Your mother's here, I'm here. Your brother's your sister. So you let him go. So I started weeping. I let my dad go. So the rituals, those are the ceremonies, the rituals. Like I talked about my early morning running and bathing. Smudge, you know, and I light the the fire releases the property inside the plants and the fungus and whatever you burn, that medicine. And I breathe it in through my nostrils, through my mouth, bring it to my eyes, my ears, my mind, my heart, talking to that medicine, to giving thanksgiving first, then thanking the medicine. And then chanting, you know, and in the lodge, I'd sing these, do this chanting, one song for each round. You know, and I talk about my running, harvesting foods. Then there's the part about sending energy, and this is where you're healing over distance. As soon as I hear relatives or friends that are struggling with something, I use the words that one of my elders taught me to send energy. And I would start to do that. And it, you know, whether it works or not, it worked for me. I mean, it helped. I know my son got healed over distance by one of my teachers. Him doing ceremony, I didn't see what he was doing. Because he was telling me to work on my son in the hospital, which I was with one of my friends. So, and also witnessing when you go to a ceremony that a family's putting on or an individual's, like you're witnessing, and it helps them to be complete. So when you go there and they give you gifts and they feed you, you take it and you be thankful, and you know, you can help them out too. Like I'd bring apples or something when a family's doing big ceremony.